everybody, and welcome to 500 Open Tabs. I'm Kaveh Taharian.
And I'm Hannah Hillam.
And welcome back to the show. we hate technology so much.
We're both fuming. We're both at the end of our... Well, and then we were like, what do we even say? We don't know how to start the show. We never know how to start the show. So we're coming in hot today.
We're coming in hot today. Anytime, here's the thing. If you want ever be a podcaster, just know as soon as you're ready to record, that's when everything will fall apart and try to destroy you. Yep. Every time. Without exception.
Somebody will be noisy. The wind will blow something down and you can't even have internet like that one time.
Multiple cement trucks will just show up outside your window.
More than one. Like a glitch in the Matrix.
More than one.
Style.
Like that's what happened this morning.
Just keep spawning.
So I'm filled with rage, but yep. I'm excited to be recording the podcast and hopefully calm down and not be mad at the world outside.
Look, we are mature enough to hold two feelings at the same time, which is excitement and rage, and that's okay.
Rage is exciting, honestly.
I love it.
Yes.
You're
correct.
Yeah. It's kind of like my lifeblood. Yeah.
I agree. Thank you guys for coming back. We're excited for today's episode. Hannah, yeah. I didn't tell you this, but somebody messaged or somebody posted something on Blue Sky about the episode that you did recently about, what was his name? Ahmed Ibn Fadlan?
Ibn Fadlan, yeah.
Yeah. They said, let's see, it's Order of the Jackalope. Shout out to that person, A.E. Order of the Jackalope. They said, one more fun fact about Ahmed Ibn Fadlan. He eventually gets written into Beowulf by Michael Crichton, who wrote Jurassic Park, and portrayed on screen by Antonio Banderas. And then that gets adapted into the 13th Warrior.
Oh.
I never saw that movie.
No.
Yeah, but I remember that movie coming out. I didn't really know what it was about, but apparently it's about him. And
it's
then
about
like
him?
Mix in this. It's about him, and they like mix the story in with like Beowulf, and he's like going on some weird adventures and shit.
Interesting. But Beowulf.
Now
came,
I kind of
like,
want to watch it.
Before. That doesn't matter.
I don't know. I think it's like some historical fiction.
Matter.
Yeah, it's fiction. It's like fact-based. I didn't watch it, so I don't know. I just did a quick glance at the summary when I was reading about it. But I thought that was cool. I kind of want to watch the movie now just out of curiosity of how it lines up to this.
We should add it to our list of movies to watch on a live stream.
Oh, yes. That's right. Yeah. Which I don't remember what else is on there, but we decided.
Roar.
Several films. Roar. That's right. Roar was going to be
Roar
on there.
Roar is on there, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Antonio Banderas is...
Handsome fella.
Fine. I don't like that I said fine. He's beautiful. I don't like any of this.
He's a handsome man.
Move on.
Yeah. Additionally, at the quick glance that I did do of that movie, it was funny because famous Egyptian actor Omar Sharif apparently did that movie and then was sad because he was like, I can't just keep doing these movies for a paycheck. I don't know what I'm doing. So he like took a break from acting as a result of how bad this movie was.
Oh, it's he a was bad like, movie?
Or apparently he felt like the process of making it was bad because he was I need to take some time to focus on me and remember why I even act in the first place because this was not it.
He had to like have a moment with himself to figure out who he really was. That's pretty interesting. Anyway, what do you have for me this week?
Okay, so this week, what do you got?
What do you got for us?
What do you got for me? So this week, I have something that's a little bit different than what I would normally do. My tab is about the 1976 Tehran UFO incident.
Oh.
Are you familiar with this?
No, I'm not.
You're not. So here's the thing. I'm not super into UFO sightings as stories, because I don't necessarily find the stories that interesting, like the narratives.
No. Well, it's just like there's nothing about it that's like, for me, it's like even if it was true, I don't want that to be true. You know,
like you don't want aliens to exist. You mean
no?
Oh, well, I'm the opposite. I'm like I don't care how real or unreal the alien sightings are or how refuted they are by science. I'm like, I just feel like it's a matter of principle where like you should believe that aliens exist.
I mean, I do believe they exist, but like I'm scared of them. So
100% scared for sure. Yeah. You have no idea what they're gonna do. But the idea that are like aliens can never, and I'm like, go away. Like
what?
You're not fun.
Do you know anything?
I don't want to hang out with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I tend to not follow the stories because the stories tend to just be really like, somebody saw a thing and then someone's like, no, that was whatever. They say Men in Black, where he's like, that was gas reflecting off Jupiter and Mars and Venus. And then that was what you, and then they come and flash the memory wipe thing. And it's kind of what they always are. But I had never heard of
a weather balloon. It's always a weather
balloon. Weather balloon. Exactly. Yeah. That's the other one they always say. But I had never heard one about an alien sighting that happened in Iran. So obviously that was interesting to me. I had sort of read about it briefly, and then I was kind of like going into it. And then I saw this one like YouTube explainer video, and it made me really angry, and I didn't like it. Cause it was like,
what made you angry?
It was like one of these, it sort of had this, like, it was like one of those kind of fun, cutesy, like vector animations being like, they had these, which I don't dislike that, to be honest. That's not the thing that made me angry. It was just sort of like, they showed Tehran and they're like, Tehran in 1970. And it looks like, speaking of Lawrence of Arabia, it's a sort of like, they're in the middle of the desert. And it looks like Agrabah from Aladdin. And then they look up and somehow there's like, you know, fighter pilots like chasing this alien. And I'm like, what the hell is this shit? So I mostly was mad and I was like, right. And I'm like, you people are racist. I'm going to do a tab on this purely out of spite.
Good. As is the only, that's the only thing I do with anything. So yeah.
That's been the theme of today for us. Spite. I ended up reading about it again. I wanted to just sort of plant this in the idea of like, what it might have been like at the time and sort of give it a little bit of context and then sort of tell the story pretty straightforward. I'm not really interested in refuting it. I think that's not that cool.
Historical context, because it's like right before the revolution, isn't it? Like 1976 is the
1976, that's right.
When was the revolution?
I think 79 is when they officially say starts.
Okay.
So 76 is interesting because it's like you said, that's literally my first line. Well done. It's a couple years before the Islamic. No. I'm saying that's good. Good job. You started at the right place. So the revolution's still 3 years away, which if for whatever reason you don't know, the Ayatollah Khomeini returns to Iran triumphantly and the Shah has been ousted. And there's a whole thing that happens after that. But we're not going to get into that today. Yeah, we don't love it.
If you want to be really sad, go read about it.
Deeply sad. Go read about
it. Oh, it's just horrific.
But anyway, 1976, Iran, as we know it, as we know it now, was very, very different back then. A young Gugush was in the midst of her meteoric rise to fame. She was sort of like the Beyonce of her day. She was like this cultural icon who sort of, you know, merged together different genres of music and was hugely popular. The original diva with a capital D. I've brought her up. I brought her up on the last podcast on musical explaining a bunch too.
Oh, really? Oh, look,
yeah,
she's
very, very iconic.
She looks awesome.
The capital, Tehran, was still seen as very cosmopolitan, you know, because at that time, the U.S. and Iran were still very tight. They had good diplomatic relations. There were even, this is crazy. I think I've come across this on YouTube, but they used to be ads for direct flights from New York to Tehran, which is the capital of Iran.
Oh.
So just to think about how different things are. I mean, I can't, as a person born after the Islamic Revolution,
so
admittedly
different
here in the States, but it's like, I can't even fathom that. It's too insane. And
you look at it now and you're like, how in the world would that have ever been?
Right. You can't fly directly. You literally can't even do it now. It's not allowed. It's sort of like going to Cuba. It's like a pariah state where you have to fly somewhere else and then fly to it.
Right.
Through somewhere else. Interestingly, of course, by this time, by 76, Nixon was gone, but Nixon and the Shah were super tight. They were pals. Yeah, this is a thing that I'm like weirdly obsessed with. There's all these pictures of Nixon and the Shah together, which are deeply entertaining to me.
I need to look.
A whole litany of reasons. But the main reason I think it's really funny, it's kind of like it's like a Shakespearean tragedy to me, which is most of what I've mentioned this before about like what's so interesting about Nixon of just being a fascinating historical figure.
Yeah.
But seeing Nixon and the Shah together to me is like extra fascinating because it's like here are these two guys and all these photos every time you see them, they're like, we are at the top of our game, like we're leaders of the world, we're the best. And like within 5 or 6 years, both of them would just be two of the most, like, tragically, you know, overthrown and deposed, like, figures in history. And especially being Iranian American, it's just such a crazy thing for me to see both of those figures at the same time having experienced similar fates.
Crazy. Did you ever, like, look at it and think, like, suddenly see all the different ways things could have panned out?
Yeah.
Like, that's, I'm looking at this picture and I'm like, dude, this would be, like, they're standing next to each other looking very, like, stoic. This would have been a very different world if this had gone any other direction.
Yeah, it's really, you know me, like, you and I talk about this, where it's just, like, an image will just spark, like, so many different stories and thoughts and, like, crazy alternative realities. But, like, that's one that always trips me out, is seeing the two of them. It's such a loaded image, just seeing them, like, standing there together. You're like, there's so much shit that happened.
It's like a little slice of time, and it feels like a weird, otherworldly, like, alternate universe.
Exactly.
Interesting. So I like this picture.
Yeah. So that's Iran in the 70s. That's kind of what's going on. And, of course, women are free to wear whatever they want. They're encouraged to pursue higher education, you know. Wow. And at the same time, dissidents who are unsympathetic to the Shah's regime and gross misuse of the nation's fortune were secretly being kidnapped and tortured by Savak, by their secret police. So 50-50, let's say. Yeah. Kind of. They had some good stuff. They had some horrific stuff.
Who doesn't?
Who doesn't? Yeah.
I kidnap and imprison people all the time. But hey.
All the time.
I'm still a good person.
Yeah. You're not very good at the torture part, but
no,
you try.
I cry a lot. It makes me cry.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is, we're not, this is not like, this is not Agrabah. Iran is not Aladdin.
You guys got sand, right?
We got, yes. By the way, Iran's a very, like, geographically diverse country. It's especially
sure.
Like Tehran, the capital, it's like there's mountains right there. Like, you don't have mountains in, like, a sand desert,
no.
Like, right by the city. It doesn't rain. It's a whole thing.
It's like the cradle of civilization for a reason. Like,
right. But there are buildings and there are things getting made. Again, just FYI, in case
I'm looking
the
at
people
pictures
that,
of Tehran.
Yeah, I'm showing you, I was gonna send
gonna
you a
sound
picture
weird,
of,
but this looks like Utah.
Interesting. Why do you say that?
Like, a lot. Like, okay, well, go look up a picture of Salt Lake City in the winter.
I actually just sent you a picture of Azadi Tower, which is Freedom Tower in Iran. Which is like that crazy science fiction looking building.
Oh, it looks like a Scientologist temple or something. Well, this thing is cool.
Yeah, the Azadi Tower was built in the 70s. That was like when that was actually completed.
Oh.
You know, here's just people walking around. And we'll put all these images up for people to see on the YouTube. But basically, it's like it's a city, right? It's not sand.
It's right. It's not
I
Aladdin.
I hate that in the year 2024, I have to explain this to people, but
it's not like some desert outpost. The, with one
they had
oasis
cars. They had gasoline, very famously.
Very famously.
Yeah,
gasoline.
Yeah. That meme where there's like the filter goes over it, where all of a sudden everything's like tinted orange. Yeah. So this is also an aerial view of Azadi Tower, which is really crazy. This is part of what becomes, just a side note, the movie Argo, which, you know, very famously everyone likes to make joke about that I was in. That becomes Azadi Tower's part of it. I was in it, yes. But Azadi Tower.
Sorry, I'm yelling. It's my favorite fact about you. Besides that
only
one time you like interviewed a guy on a bridge in Michigan or something.
Huh?
Was that you? Ooh,
no.
Wrong person.
I don't know what that was. Wow. We all look the same, don't we, Hannah?
Okay.
No, that was Aladdin from the movie Aladdin.
Oh, sorry. I'm so sorry. I forgot.
You're right. Whoa. Actually, this photo that you sent me does kind of look like Utah. It's kind of crazy.
That is Utah I just sent you.
Yeah. Anyway, the reason I brought up Argo was to say that,
cool,
like, that tower was part of the reason why they were like, oh, we can try and remember the story of it, is where they're trying to sneak the hostages out. They're like, Azadi Tower looks like it's from a science fiction film. So when you look at it and when you look at the aerial view, it does kind of look like crazy and science fiction-y. It doesn't look
like a
normal
movie set. Yeah.
Yeah, it does look like it's made for a movie. It's really crazy and beautiful. So anyway, that's the context, just to give you a sense of like what Iran was like at that time in 76.
Okay.
So are the incident starts around midnight on September 19th. And four Tehran residents called the local Mehrabad airport and reported seeing a bright light in the sky. These are just randos. These aren't like specific people.
Right.
And at that time, Mehrabad's radar was under repair and not operational for some strange reason.
Dang.
So at around 12:30 a.m., the Imperial Iranian Air Force gets a call at their main command post in Tehran. So somebody from the airport calls them up and they're like, here, we're getting calls about this bright light. What's going on? Do you guys know anything? And so whatever, the first person that takes the call writes the note down on a piece of paper. And then he goes into like this room that has like, you know, top secret, like no one allowed. And he patches through and there's a guy having a meeting and he goes and like whispers something into the main dude's ear. Then that guy takes the note and he's like, oh, I got to take this to my boss. Then he goes to another guy in another more top secret room and he whispers into that guy's ear all the way up the ranks. And eventually it arrives at the table of General Yousefi. General Yousefi is the assistant deputy. You know him.
No, I do.
Oh, you do?
I think I have a tab open on him.
So the note reaches General Yousefi. And he's, you know, he's a seasoned guy. He's chilling there and he's sipping on his tea because that's what Persians do. We all just drink tea all the time, which, by the way,
really?
We call chai. Whenever when people say chai tea, it's just like saying tea, tea. Have you heard this before?
Tea. Yeah.
Chai is just tea. So when you say chai tea, it's like saying cafe coffee. It doesn't make sense. It's the same thing twice.
The La Brea tar pits.
Yeah, sure. I didn't know that. I didn't even think about that. I didn't know what La Brea meant. Tartar pits.
It literally translates to the tartar pits. So whenever I'm in LA, I'm like, the
tartar pits.
Yeah.
I'm going to start saying that every time I drive by it from now on. He's sipping on his chai, which is Earl Grey, you know, just like Picard. That's what he's doing. And he's probably got like a sugar cube tucked away in his cheek. Do you guys know this? This is what the old school Persian guys, that's what they always do. They take a sugar cube. They don't put sugar into this tea and stir it around. The old school guys will take it and it's like dip, where they'll put it in their cheek. And then they'll sip tea so that every sip gets its own sugar like burst.
That's actually genius. I want to try that.
Yeah, you can. There you go. That's my free bit of a suggestion for you today.
Okay.
So he gets this note. He's got the tea in there and he takes a sip. You know, he's like, and he kind of looks and he's like, very interesting. So that's what this whole tab is going to be, by the way, is just this. So
I'm excited. I'm glad because you actually have cultural perspectives.
Yes,
like
I have
tea,
cultural
like
references that
like
I can make.
The sugar. Made it. Because chances are he was drinking tea, right?
Oh, I'm sure he was, especially if he's working an overnight shift.
Yeah.
So General Yousefi calls up the phone. He picks up the phone and he calls the Air Force Base in Hamadan, which is about 170 miles west of Tehran. And he picks it up and he's like, "Hello, Navi June, how are you?"
I'm laughing, but I don't know if I should be.
It's meant to be funny.
Good.
He's like, "Navi June, how are you? Oh, your wife is good. Nice. Yeah, good, good. Listen, I got this call from the airport. I guess a bunch of people said there was like a colorful disco flying saucer or something. Is this one of ours?" And he's like, "No, okay. Can you check the radar and see if it shows up?" And Navi, you know, he gets
famous Iranian disco saucers. Yeah,
disco UFOs.
Yeah, it's one of their.
We're colorful people.
Fleet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you call your Air Force the disco? I don't know what I'm saying.
Disco Air Force.
Disco saucer.
The disco saucers. And Navi, he takes a look at the radar and he runs it and he's like, "No, Azizem, I don't see anything." And Yousefi is like, okay, merci, Jigar. I'm so sorry to bother you this time of night. Don't worry about it." And he's like trying to hang up and Navi keeps talking and he's like, "Okay, yes, Navi Jun, no, you don't have anything to worry about. Khomeini will never come back and overthrow the Shah. Don't be so dramatic. I'll never be fine. Okay,
that's
bye. Salam berisun." Yeah, and he just hangs up. Click.
Oh, sad. Just got sad.
And he kind of sits there for a sec and Yousefi takes another sip of his chai and he's mulling it over and he's like, "You know, I wonder if..." No, this is probably stupid, but I should just try. So he gets up from his desk and he's like, "Why don't I just go outside and see if I can see it for myself?" And he goes out on the balcony and he looks And of course, what does he see? It's like a freaking giant iridescent flying saucer. He sees it with his own two eyes.
He sees it?
He sees it. And so he takes a look outside. And he's like, "Duh, what the hell is this?" And so now he's invigorated. He marches back inside and he calls up the base and he orders. So there's a couple different references here. I don't know who it was actually, but there's it's not like super well documented, but the accounts that I found said that Lieutenant Yadi Nazeri is the pilot first. Somebody else said it was Captain Mohammad Reza Aziz Khani. It doesn't really matter which one of them it is, but he sends a pilot. So for the purposes of this part of the story, it's Nazeri. And so he tells the base, he says, send this lieutenant with a plane to go check it out. So by around 1:30 a.m., Nazeri and his like backseat guy, they hop into an F-4 Phantom fighter plane and they take off. This is from the military base. This is not from Tehran.
Okay.
And Nazeri and his homie, like these guys, they're professionals. They're good pilots. You know, you can't be part of the Air Force if you're like some schlub. You know, these are people that are hardcore. Like they're good at what they do. And, you know, they're flying along. They're listening to, you know, Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins, even though Top Gun wouldn't come out for like another 10 years. But, you know, military tech. The military technology, you know, it's always like available to the military first before it goes to civilians. So
that goes for movies too. Yeah.
Yes. Or songs the military had developed. Yeah. And they were working with the states. They were still friends.
They were buddies. Nixon.
Yeah.
Pandas.
Nixon's like, listen, I got this great song by Kenny Loggins. It's called Danger Zone. It's not going to be out for another 10 years, but give it to your Air Force pilots because it'll motivate them.
Oh, man. I like your Nixon voice.
It's always fun to do a Nixon. They're flying along. They're listening to Kenny Loggins, and they start to get closer and closer, and they see it. They see the bright object. It's not just hearsay.
In the sky, like, they're flying near it.
Yeah, as they're flying closer to it, it's of such brilliance that it could be seen from almost 70 miles away.
What?
Yeah. And they're getting closer and closer. And as they start to approach it, I think they're probably within like 25, 30 miles of it. They're like, wait, what's happening? And Nazeri notices that the plane starts to crap out. It starts going like the lights are going like off and on. Like things are just like beep, beep. Like stuff starts wigging out and going crazy. And he's like, bro, what the hell? This isn't even a Boeing plane. This is an actual fighter jet.
Oh, that's a good one.
And everything starts crapping out and he can't even communicate back to the Air Force base to tell him what's going on. And things are looking dire.
Yeah.
And so he does the sensible thing and he's like, I got to get the hell out of here. I got to go back. So,
well, yeah.
So he stops and makes a 3-point turn, you know,
backs up this airplanes way. Always do. Yeah. But it's like Austin Powers and he just does it forever. For like 30 or 40 times in the air.
50-point turn. So he's like, and he flies back to the Air Force base in Hamadan. And once he's out of the vicinity of this UFO, suddenly the lights turn back on, stops flickering, and everything starts working normal again.
What?
And he's like, weird, suspicious.
I just got chills. This is freaky.
Just like him. Okay. And he lands back at the Air Force base, calls up Yusefi, who's now on his fourth cup of tea.
And fifth sugar cube somehow. Mouth he's full. Like, yeah, like a ham.
Full. He's like a chipmunk, just filled. And Yusuf's like this, or just keeps putting in more and more sugar cubes.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm not going to back down from this. Because we're Persians. We're crazy. We're nuts. We're not going to, we have to escalate every time. We're extra.
Oh, is that not so just you?
No. It's a cultural thing. Oh, we're all like this.
Okay. Awesome.
He slams another tea, his fourth cup, with like, you know, like I said, like you said, the chipmunk cheek filled with sugar cubes.
I want to draw that.
And he calls him up and he says, I need a second F-4 jet to investigate because maybe the original plane just crapped out because, you know, whatever, the cleaning guy didn't do jet maintenance that day like he was supposed to, and he took like a post kebab nap in the break room. He's, you know, who knows? These things happen.
I'm piecing this together. I think I know what you're saying.
Kebab naps are a real thing. When you have chelo kebab, you immediately have to just like every
is
uncle,
that a kind
dad.
Of food or?
Yeah, kebabs. Like kebabs, like on a skewer, like a meat on the skewer with a bed
sorry.
Of rice. I'm assuming you've had kebab before.
Of course. I just didn't know that's actually how you say it.
So we always joke about like a post kebab nap because it's just like it's meat and it's rice and it's like buttery and just it's delicious.
To sleep.
Immediate nap, immediately passing out on the couch. Anytime you're at someone's house and there's like a party and then people are having kebab, it's just literally
like where's the couch?
Old men with like their pants pulled up here with like a glass of chai like falling out and just like,
you're
classic.
Really painting this picture. And I love this. I love this.
So he's like, maybe Ehsan, the guy who was supposed to fix the fighter pilot, the fighter jets that day, had one of those infamous kebab naps. So might have just been one of those. So he's like, we're gonna. The only way to know is to send a second plane to go. And General Yousafi sends, this time it's Lieutenant Parviz Jafari, which Jafari, the name in Farsi is always funny to me because it's kind of a homonym. And it also means parsley, like the herb.
Oh, General Parsley reporting for duty.
Literally, yes. So Yusuf is like, I don't want Captain Basil or Private Commander Cilantro. Get me Lieutenant Parsley right now.
Chive? Lieutenant Chive? Absolutely not.
No, this is a job for Parsley. And he shows up and he's like, Lieutenant Parsley reporting for duty, sir.
Bunch of sugar cubes fall out of his mouth. Just I can't stop thinking about that. Reporting for duty. Anyway, continue.
So Jafari, he's like higher ranked or something because he was like, we need to send the big boys in. So Jafari hops in a plane and he flies out and he does the same thing as before. First thing he does is he starts blasting Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins.
Of course. It's standard issue among everybody in the military.
It was Air Force protocol at the time. And
trying to keep it under control this time. For those of you who don't know, and nobody does, but I had a 5-minute laughing fit during one of our episodes that we had to cut out because I couldn't stop.
It was a lot of fun.
Try not to.
Yes. It's okay. It's meant to make you laugh. It's meant to be a good time. And
it's
so
working.
He gets closer, and sure enough, he sees the thing too, and it's big. It's like this big flashing thing. And he says, he describes it as, it was flashing with intense red, green, orange, and blue lights so bright that I was not able to see its body. So it's like this apparition almost. He's just like, I can't even see the center of it because it's so like intense. It's like a flame almost.
It's like a defense mechanism of like, I'm going to be too bright for you to understand me.
Yeah, like flashing in your lights and disarm you or something.
Crazy.
But
okay.
Jafari's like, I ain't no punk bitch. I'm not going to back down. So he gets closer to it.
Yeah, Parsley.
Parsley's like, let's do this. So as he closed in on the object, it began to move because it was clearly aware that an interception was happening. And suddenly, a smaller object detached from the original.
No.
It just going like, it like popped out and it started to make a quick advance towards Jafari's F4. And he's like, oh, shit, this is like a missile or a bomb or something. He doesn't quite know. He assumes that it's something that's going to attack him. So he like basically is like, crap. So he tries to shoot a Sidewinder missile only to discover once again, all weapons and communications capabilities were lost. They all crapped out once again.
I listen to a lot of things about UFOs. I've never heard of this. This is so scary. This is so creepy.
Right. And he didn't learn because as President 9/11 once famously said, there you go, by the way, I said it. Fool me once, shame on you. You can't get fooled again.
You can't get fooled again. Yeah. That quote is going to be inscribed on a stone for years to come.
Tombstone, hopefully.
Yeah, there it is.
War criminal. Yeah, when he's buried in his grave. And Jafari's like... He's like, bro, I don't get paid enough for this shit. He's like, I'm not getting in some weird like intergalactic fight. And he tries to eject from the aircraft. So he goes and he hits the button and that doesn't work either. He's like, oh, shit.
Nothing's working.
So he turns the jet around. Again, Austin Powers, like 50-point turn.
Yeah, 50-point turn.
And he makes what they call a negative G dive, which, did you ever used to watch the Tailspin cartoon?
Oh, so long
ago. Way back
ago?
In the day. Yeah. Yeah. So you remember when Baloo would get chased, he'd be like, we got to do this. And he would do like the dive. That's apparently what it, that's what a negative G dive is.
That doesn't seem real, but okay.
I gotta get away from, I gotta bomb so that they don't follow me.
We've lost contact with Lieutenant Parsley.
Yeah. Lieutenant Parsley is pulling a Tailspin. He's pulling a Baloo. And he's doing this to try and get away. And sure enough, the smaller object is like, oh no, excuse me. And he starts following him.
What?
And he's chasing him. He's chasing Captain Parsley. Sorry, Lieutenant Parsley down. And he's like, yeah, I'm the captain now, bitch. You go. And he's like, you can't get away from me. And Jaffetti does like this loop-de-loop. And he comes back up. And he starts doing all this weird, crazy, like, you know, pilot-y stuff. And he manages to get away. And then the ship, like the mini ship that was following him, he stops and hangs back. And he's like, yeah, you better run. Whatever. Go.
How does it stop? It stops midair?
It's aliens. That's basically, no, I got to like brush my hair up in the guy. Yeah. Like, because aliens.
Because aliens.
And once again, when Jaffetti gets away from the main ship, everything in his jet started working again, predictably. But this time, instead of flying all the way back to the Air Force base in Hamadan, he decides to go to the Mehrabad airport in Tehran, which is where the first sightings were happening in the capital.
Right.
And as he was going towards that airport, he sees another brightly lit object detach itself from the other side of the giant flying orby disco spaceship. And it drops straight down fast as shit. And whoa, it looked like it was going to just like fully crash and explode. But right before it hit the ground, it just goes bloop and like gracefully slows down and comes to a gentle rest.
What?
Yeah. And Jaffetti's like, yeah, okay, I don't know. I'm not going to investigate this, but he makes note of like where he was. So he's like, we'll deal with this later. He's like, right now I need to get the hell away from this thing.
Let's
so I don't get
back burner this.
Yeah, he's like, what do they say in like corporate speak? They're like, let's circle back to this, hang a lantern on it. Let's save this for a Monday all hands meeting.
Yeah, that's what he says.
And he approaches Mehrabad Airport and he noted that, I don't understand what any of this means, but he says that each time they pass through a magnetic bearing of 150 degrees from Mehrabad, they experience interference and experience communications failure. So I think it's sort of like there's another ring of like weird, you know, discombobulating rays that are
radar,
throwing everything off as he's going in closer to like a hula hoop or something like around the giant airport. A civilian airliner that was approaching Mehrabad also experienced the loss of communications at that time position relative to Mehrabad. I have no idea scientifically what any of this means. Doesn't matter, but it's apparently crazy. And remember, this is by this point probably like 2:30 in the morning.
So it's been sitting there. It's been like hovering in the air this whole time. It's
been chilling for a couple of hours.
Scary.
And so as Jaffetti was on his final approach, he saw yet another object.
No! What?
Cylinder-shaped.
Okay.
With bright, steady lights on each end and a flashing light in the middle. Mehrabad Tower reported no other aircraft in the area, but tower personnel were able to see the object when given direction by Jaffetti. He's just like, dude, just check out whatever, like 30 degrees north, 40 degrees, whatever. And they were all like, okay, yeah, we can see it too. It just wasn't showing up on the radar, but they could all see it with their eyes.
So it was like cloaking device or something. It wouldn't show up on radar.
Yeah, exactly. And so all their electrical equipment briefly went down. Again, kind of scary. Before the object made its way back to the main ship, a large flash of light occurred and disappeared out of sight. So then it all went away.
What? Okay, it sounds like they're like, let's get some test samples and then get out of here. Oops, they saw us.
Oops. And they keep sending stuff out. So that's it. And it was gone.
What? Okay.
Eventually, all the pilots and personnel reconvened. And General Yousefi is there. And he's like, gentlemen, I've had too many sugar cubes. And I fear I may be pre-diabetic now.
Immediate that night pushed him over the edge.
That night he's like, my wife is gonna kill me, my doctor has been warning me about this, it's been a long night, everybody just go home and go to bed, I don't have, we'll figure it out later.
Wow. So he just says, okay, we're done for the night.
Done for the night. So they all, you know, they all honk shoo and then they come back the next morning.
with their caps on.
With their caps on, and they come back, and they're having, you know, they have their morning chai, they're having whatever, like kalapacha, something or other. They're having their breakfast, they're chilling, and they decide to take a helicopter to where Jafari had seen that smaller object that seemed like it was going to crash on the ground, and then it just sort of like stopped. And in the daylight, it was determined to be a dry lake bed, but no traces could be seen of anything that was around there. And they circled the area to the west and picked up a noticeable beeper signal. The signal was loudest near a small house. So they landed and questioned the occupants of the house about any unusual events of the previous night. The people that were living there reported a loud noise and a bright light, like lightning, but that was it. They were kind of like, I don't know. But I like to think in my mind that the aliens basically were looking for real estate where they could move in and start a house. So they started a house there and they put one up and they just pretended like they were dumb. They were like, I don't know. But now they're very happy. Like they're like, we found a plot of land. We can finally start a family.
In this free, democratic country that's going to stay this way forever.
Yes.
Perfect.
Perfect. Real estate price. It's only going to go up from here.
Yeah.
And ultimately,
that
would
theory.
Be the end of the investigation for Jafari and the other pilots, as they were specifically told to move on as if it had never occurred. They were like, just forget about it. We don't know. And how do we know all of this?
Yeah. How do we?
Because the Iranians told the Americans. Following the incident, Iran invited the United States Air Force Section Chief, Lieutenant Colonel Olin Mooy, M-O-O-Y. I've never seen that last name before. I apologize.
Mooy,
Mooy. They invited him to a debriefing. And the story, as given, came from Mooy's official memorandum for record based on his notes.
Whoa.
It's now been seen as an exemplary UFO sighting case with a lot of witnesses, clear notes, and cooperation between two different governments.
That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Oh, and I wonder, it's interesting because I wonder what else there was because that's what they told him.
Downloaded like some of this. Dude, have you ever looked at like government documents, like these reports?
Yeah, they're horrible.
They're so long. There's all this other stuff in it. It's just like, I don't know. There doesn't seem to be. It's basically like, here's context for everything that's ever happened in the history of the world as you read about like this two sentence story.
Oh,
so I immediately gave up.
Yeah.
So I would not be good in the military.
No.
I would never be a United States Air Force section chief. But
I would never be anything in the government because I would immediately tell everybody everything. I'd be like, Guess what country we organized a coup for today?
Yeah,
and then the CIA fires me immediately.
Well, they would probably make you disappear. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. I'd die.
It's seen as like an exemplary case. Journalist Philip Klass suggested that the bright light they saw was the planet Jupiter, right? As an explanation that was echoed by aerospace researcher James Oberg, many ufologists have dismissed this explanation, saying that Jupiter's direction in the sky was 90 degrees wrong. I don't know shit about what any of this means, but have fun. Have at it.
Yeah.
That's just what they say. In regards to the mini ship / missile things, like the little extra ones that came out of the main ship.
Or whatever.
Canisters. Astronomer Gary Kronk studied years of annual meteor data up to and through 1980. On September 19th, we were at or near the maximums of two minor annual showers, the Gamma Pisces and the Southern Pisces, and at the tail end of a third shower, the Eta Draconids. And there was more than enough expected meteoric activity to account for all the reports of falling lights and rapidly moving bright objects.
I don't think it makes
sense in terms of like him getting followed back and forth and like all this stuff. And there's a lot of like hand wavy kind of shit that I think there's a tinge of a lot of this kind of stuff that tends to be very dismissive that I don't personally like. It tends to just be like, oh, I don't know, like the Iranians had like some stupid ass like ships that were probably working. You know what I mean? You never know.
Right.
Like,
right.
Yeah. I think there's this saying,
oh, immediately like, no, that could never be. That could never be. But, you know.
And more to the point of what I was saying at the top of this is like, it doesn't matter to me, like the scientific proof of what it is necessarily, because the point of it is like, it's like faith in a way where you're like, that you're missing the point if you're trying to scientifically prove it. The point is like, by believing in this kind of thing and hoping for this kind of thing, like, I don't know, it's exciting to me. And it gives like the human race, like sort of the sense of wonder and that things are cool and maybe there's more stuff out there and continuing to explore and be interested,
feel less
you know?
Alone.
Yeah. Just
that's
let us have
like
it. Just let us have these cool ships. Who cares? It's not hurting anybody.
No.
And our boy, Lieutenant Parsley, Parviz Jafedi, was like, bro, I know what I saw. And he continued to speak about it publicly.
Good.
And he even did this talk that was like some military something or other talk here. It's I'll post the link in the show notes. But he does like this thing. And I think it's like 2007. It's like 30 years later. He's still talking about it. So he's like, this is what I saw. He's like, I don't think he doesn't subscribe to the whole like, oh, it was just random meteors. He's just like, bro, I know what we saw. We all of us saw the same shit.
Me.
Like, yeah. And, you know, the facts may have wavered over time, but his belief in what he saw never did.
Whoa. Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah.
People who see UFOs and talk about it, I mean, that's like a crappy, it's pretty much you pretty much ruin your life, like by coming out and being like, no, I know what I saw, because everybody, it's not something you would do for attention. You know,
right.
What I mean? It would be like, it's like, oh, you want your whole life to get ruined by being a pariah in society for believing in aliens? Okay. So like, I don't, you know.
I think pilots are always really interesting. I mean, this is what
like
the Foo Fighters of, what was it, World War II, is when they were all like, we saw all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, I think pilot accounts are always really interesting, because you're like, that's not some like, you know, drunk guy in a truck was like, I got like anally probed randomly. It's like.
No, but yeah, pilots have like a degree of like professionalism behind them when they talk about it.
And it's also equally interesting to be like, oh, well, when you're, because, you know, they'll try and refute it by being like, pilot, a lot of people that like stuff that I've read tends to be like, pilots are nuts, like they're under stress and they're like high up in the air all the time and like the oxygen's weird and they start hallucinating things. But at the same token, I'm like, pilots spend a lot of time up in the air that like most people don't spend up in the air. So it would seem logical that they would see weird shit that we wouldn't necessarily normally see on the day to day. Just not scientifically, but just sort of extrapolating basic kind of logic of like, I'm like, seems like I would kind of, at least kind of believe some of that. Anyway, the point's
trust
not to say
pilot.
Like, anyway, I thought that was, it was an opportunity to tell a story that was not about Aladdin and, you know, people with camels running around seeing like a bright orb in the sky.
And not being like, oh, we can't figure that out because we're, you know.
Yeah, no, Iran had an airport and an air force base and cars and buildings and electricity and running water.
And trees.
And trees. So
it's nice to hear it not set in New Mexico, too. Because like all the UFO things are always like, in the southern United States, we saw a UFO. But this is like, I've never heard of this before. Like,
yeah.
Somewhere in the Middle East. Yeah, I know.
Eastern UFO representation matters.
That should be your next panel at Comic-Con.
That should. Oh, that's a good idea. I'll go ahead and pitch it.
Yeah.
I'll see if other ones that I mean, kind of my cursory glance at other stuff. There's like something that was in Morocco around the same time. There was like, this broader theory that I'm not going to get into now, but it was like, there were similar things that were happening around the similar time where they're like, oh, this might have all been part of one giant UFO conspiracy shooting off different stuff in the Middle East. But I was like, this is too much. This is already very long. So I was like, I'm not going to get into that. But anyway, that's my tab
for another day.
Another
Thank
tab
you for
another
telling
day.
Me about that.
Yeah.
That was really cool. I'm excited to go read more because I wanted to watch that video and everything.
Yeah. Thanks to Lieutenant Jafedi. Thanks to our homeboy, Mr. Parsley and Yusufi. Next time you're having some tea, just try putting a sugar cube in your cheek. Seeing if it works. Like the old school guys.
I'm going to be an old school guy and do that. I don't drink tea enough, though, but I like that image.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my tab. What do you got?
Awesome. Well, thank you. My tab is a page from Georgia Oglethorpe University's website, and it's about something called the Crypt of Civilization. This is a pretty wild ride. It's one of those tabs where, like, I kind of skimmed it, like, a year ago, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then I got into it, and it's actually insane. So the best kind. And so I had gone back in my tabs, like scrolled all the way back, because I was like, I got to get rid of these sometime. And this one was open right next to the page for list of time capsules. And I remembered I got into a huge like time capsule hole like a year ago. And then I realized there were too many time capsules to keep up with and I moved on. But this one I kept open. So
this is very consistent with you because you're like, oh, what's buried in the ground? Time capsules.
Oh, wow.
It's a theme. That's why you relate to time capsules so hard.
I've I wore a shirt. I themed my shirt after.
Nice.
After
Sarah's,
this. So.
Sarah's seeping into the show.
It just says, it's a guy in a coffin, and it says, just Whoa. Resting my eyes.
Amazing.
And it's the closest I could get to something buried in the ground. So
it's perfect. I love it.
So the Crypt of Civilization is one of the world's biggest time capsules. And it is buried underneath Oglethorpe University in Georgia. So the whole thing starts with this one guy, and his name is Thornwell Jacobs, one of those great turn of the century.
Thor. Does he spell his name cool?
He better. No, he doesn't. He's actually kind of, he's nuts. But I'm going to spell his name Thornwell Jacobs. I'm coming around.
So, Thornwell, he said?
Thornwell Jacobs, yeah.
Thornwell Jacobs, got it.
Yes. And so he is what some people have referred to as the father of modern time capsules. He had this idea. So what?
Say I had never thought about like who was the first person to come up with a time capsule. And he's just this insane guy being like, what if we buried a bunch of shit in the ground for people to see later? It's not like treasure, like the pirates who are doing it to like come back later. He's just like, what if we took like my dirty underwear and like half a toilet paper roll and like, you know, my birth certificate and some chocolate bars and dug them in the ground and dug them up 20 years later for fun.
Oh, it's that, but add about 6,000 years to it, and then you've got it. Because his idea, and I'm going to get into the details later, but this crypt is an airtight, impenetrable time capsule that was sealed in 1940, and it's scheduled to be open in the year 8,113.
Oh, I love this.
Yeah. So they were this guy was like super inspired by, so in 1922, they opened King Tut's tomb. And if you've heard anything about it, there's like the whole the curse of Tutankhamen and stuff. And
yeah, yeah. No, I've seen it. They brought it to L.A. at one point where they brought it to.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they opened the tomb and the Western world just lost it. They were like, this is the best, because they love to grave rob or whatever. That's my culture.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
My culture is grave robbing.
They were like, oh, let's take it to the British Museum.
Yay, our big, beautiful depository of stolen items. Anyway, he saw in the newspapers this tomb was open, and he was like, blew his mind, because in that tomb there was all these things that had represented the pharaoh's life, you know? They bury him with a lot of different things. And he was like, what would it be like if we did that? But we didn't do it just randomly. We, like, put stuff in here to really give the future people something to understand about us. Because
yeah,
the Egyptians, you know, they would bury their kings in that way. And so we only got this like glimpse of how their kings lived and how their important people lived. And so he had this idea to like make it about the common man and to put like what was happening in 1936, which is when he had the idea, which was when he started doing it. But what's going on then?
It's really cool. It's like you're thinking more like a historian for future generations rather than this like weird religious or kind of vanity thing. Like we talked about with the Vikings too. Although the Vikings, I guess, burned everybody, but they didn't bury him. But it's sort of a similar idea that like you're just burying somebody with all their stuff rather than trying to say like here's. I had never thought of that, but like it's actually a really cool angle for it.
Yeah, it is, and the like he the heart was in, his heart was in it, and it was in the right place. And he had this vision. He's been described as being very charismatic. A good salesman, a good ideas man. He could come into a situation and be like, guess what? Here's what I'm going to do. And everyone would be like, yes, we're going to do that. So
skin hype.
Oh, yeah. And so he had this idea after seeing the tomb open. And that was in 1922. And so this idea kind of like sat in his head. So let's talk a little bit more about Thornwell Jacobs.
Okay.
Thornwell was born in South Carolina to a Presbyterian minister father and who ran an orphanage. So Thornwell grew up in an orphanage, but with parents. So that must have been weird.
Man, that's already like, there's so much to unpack there. Yeah.
Dark. he grew up to become a printer's apprentice and then got a Bachelor of Arts. Didn't write down the university, of course. And then he got a Bachelor of Divinity. So pretty much like religion.
I'll say really this real quick before you move on, just in terms of charisma and like having a way with words. I remember reading this story about Mark Twain that he used to be a typesetter before he was a writer. And he talked about, he was like, yeah, he was like trying to make some connection where he was like, there was something about like literally physically putting like letters and words on a piece of paper for typesetting to like print books and shit that made me think about like words and the importance of words and how words get stringed together. There was something sort of like, he was saying that like, that's kind of how I started to think about stories and started thinking about how you write stories and how words string together. You know what I mean? Just like on a very
cool,
what's the word I'm thinking of? Like on a micro level almost, like conceptually. Yeah. So I wonder if it's interesting that you said that he was, I always think that it's interesting when people from back in those days were working in printing or any of that kind of stuff. Like, I wonder how much that there's truth to that, that sort of bleeds into how they think about it, especially because you said he's charismatic and like is good with words and is able to string a lot of interesting sentences together. I wonder if there's a correlation. Totally derailed, but sorry.
I could easily see that being something that his young mind was like, I'm printing human knowledge. You know, there's a huge, there's like a huge thing to do with it. Like, books and print and words are actually, now that you say that, you'll see what he does later. It's
okay, cool.
Interesting. I had never thought about that, but okay, so he starts writing books, and he's a minister, and he writes some books a little bit questionable. He is from South Carolina. He wrote a book about, it was called The Law of the White Circle. So
okay.
Yeah, but I couldn't find anything on it.
What is the White Circle?
I don't know. But it's a book about a black man and a white man who are both in love with the same mixed race woman. And it was set during the Atlanta race massacre. So I didn't get into it.
There's some drama.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's certainly a dramatic setting.
To me, it sounded like white dude being like trying to make sense of segregation in a way that
this is our
like a symbolic, like, I don't know, it hasn't been printed in like 70 years, so I don't know what it's about. But he got really into writing it, and he also got really into writing other stuff. In 1915, we're going back a little bit before he got inspired for the crypt, he decided to reestablish Oglethorpe University, and it's a university outside of Atlanta that his grandfather had gone to, and he had always heard these great stories about, but during the Civil War, they had closed it. And so he used his skill at getting people on board with things to raise a ton of money to make this university open again. He got William Randolph Hearst to donate money. He got Coca-Cola, the company, cocaine, to donate. Yeah, so the Coke trade, the legal Coke trade. He got them to donate money, and he was able to open this university and become the president. And so now he has this university. So he has the resources to actually be like, I'm going to make this time capsule. And he also ran some weird experiment called the Brain Team that I tried to understand.
Think tank of some sort? Like a brain trust?
No, he was just like experimenting on students. This is the thing. He's of his time.
He's complicated.
He's a... old Thornwell is an interesting man.
Thornwell.
Yeah. Sorry.
His past is a bit thorny. I know. Sorry. I'm fired.
Yeah. You are fired.
That's another thing we should do is how many times I get fired in every episode. It's just like, how many warnings do I get before I get fired from being a terrible pun? Pun alert.
Oh, yeah. The puns are good. As I get older, I'm like, that's pretty funny.
I don't know what else. It's like a deteriorating middle-aged male.
I was
male
about to say, is it because
mind.
My brain is deteriorating and things are just dumber and funnier? I think maybe.
I always like that it bothers people. Like, that's really all it comes down to. It's like people just get so annoyed by a pun, and I'm like, this doesn't matter. And people get so irritated, and I think that's what makes me laugh.
I think they get irritated. Like, I've thought about, why do I get irritated by puns? But because I think I'm expecting something else, and then the letdown of it being a pun is just like, oh.
That's just life, dude. It's a letdown. Anyway. Sorry, I derailed.
Anyway,
you're saying he's doing human experiments on the brain club.
It's like he was like trying to make students like go to class more and less and see who got better after how many hours studied, but.
Oh, okay, he's not like injecting them with like weird stuff into their brains. It's more like social experiments.
It's the social experiment, which is like back in the day, you could do a social experiment on anything at any time.
As opposed to now, where social media companies can just be like, hey, guess what? I have all your information about every single pattern you have, including when you're going to be pregnant, and you don't even know it yet, and we're going to show you ads for that.
Yeah.
Facebook did it. Look it up. 10 more tabs. Continue.
No, I remember. No, when I was first pregnant, before I told anybody, it just knew. Somehow it knew. Yep. It's like, here's this for this. And anyway, great. Love it. Can't wait to be hunted down by a robot made by Meta. Just running through the streets of...
And its name is Thornwell. And I am Thornwell the robot.
Thornwell,
I am here to experiment on you. Put on this white ring.
Yeah, it kills me. No, I wouldn't. It wouldn't kill me. I'd kill it. Anyway, so Thornwell is like time capsule obsessed. And it's funny because they call him the father of time capsules, but time capsules have been around forever. The very first paragraph of the Epic of Gilgamesh talks about a time capsule. So in it, it says that the person reading this, to find the full story of Gilgamesh, they needed to go to the walls of Uruk in modern-day Iraq and open up a certain area of the wall and pull out a copper box and find the full transcript. And it had like two paragraphs of like, here's how you find it.
Was it's that the real? Did that exist?
Yes. No, I don't know if they found it.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so, but the idea that somebody hid something in a wall, you know, that they wanted someone to find later is ancient. And people used to, I think Paul Revere buried one inside of like a building back in the 1790s, and we just opened it in 2014, and I got to watch it live. It was really cool.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was boring. It was like newspapers and coins.
Socks.
What? Yeah.
I don't know why it was socks. It just is.
It was just a bunch of stuff about the founding fathers. And so in 1876, there was a time capsule closed as well during the Philadelphia World Fair. And Ulysses S. Grant was the one who was like overseeing the closure, and they put a bunch of stuff in it. And it got opened by Gerald Ford, I think, in 1976.
Oh,
no,
okay.
That's Nixon.
I don't know. Yeah, no, you're right. 76. I'm laughing because I forgot that you were talking about a time capsule for a second. And I was like, why was Gerald Ford with Ulysses S. Grant? Just immediately like open. And I'm like, oh, yeah, idiot. We're talking about time capsules.
It's my fan fiction.
It's Gerald Ford. You're right. Yes.
But this is funny because 1976 is also when the UFO sighting
was. That's true. Yeah.
Maybe they opened the time capsule and that.
Maybe that's what caused the aliens to come out. It was actually Ulysses S. Grant's aliens that came.
It was Paul Revere's ghost.
Socks.
Socks. Sick. So just to point out that there were other time capsules, but the words time capsule were first said when it was about this guy's thing. So I'm hopping all over the place, but I'm hoping it's going to make sense.
Yeah.
Oh, I also forgot my favorite time capsules is in the head of a giant axe. In Canada.
Whoa.
And the axe is massive. Yes.
Like a swinging axe?
Yes, yeah, like a gigantic axe sculpture. And they put a time capsule
sounds like
in
a
the head of it.
Thing to make fun of Canada. Like, what did you do? You put your time capsule in a gigantic axe? And they're like, as a matter of fact, yes.
We did. I'll put a picture of it up. It's ridiculous looking. It looks like a cartoon. Anyway, so... that's Thornwell. He got this university off the ground, and he decided to call it the Crypt of Civilization because he liked the idea of laying it out like an actual crypt, like an Egyptian tomb. And he was there like, well, when do you want to open this? And he's like, oh, I don't know, in the year 8,000 something. And he figured it out because he did a bunch of calculations, and he was like, math, 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 or however people do math. And he was like, he figured out that... 6,177 years before 1940 was the furthest back anyone had found a calendar. So like the Egyptian calendar started that long ago. And he's like, well, let's just add that number to 1940 and this will be like a middle point.
Did you ever read Foundation?
No.
By Asimov. This is basically Asimov's like, everything's going to be ruined until like 10,000 years from now because I'm predicting all these other things will happen. And so whatever, it's basically, it's loosely the plot of Foundation, very loosely. extremely loose.
Numerology. That's pretty much what this is. He's like
just predicting like 7,000 years from now, like we got to form like a committee that like will make sure that we kind of like in Fifth Element where he's like, we got to make sure that like this message continues on for like 300 generations so that they know like 7,000 years from now that this thing will.
That's what they did.
This contains this thing. Yeah.
So in preparation for this, he was like, we have to figure out a way. We got to find a place where this can be waterproof, airtight, hermetically sealed. We have to encase it in all sorts of stuff that can stand the test of time. So he got like archaeologists involved and scientists and like manufacturers to be, because he had a bunch of money now, you know, he got a bunch of funding. Part of the funding was from, funny enough, the Rosicrucian Order. Are you familiar with the Rosicrucian?
Yeah.
They're like a cult. So, and they're based, they're actually based near me. So,
how their base is convenient. Basically, what you're saying is that you're the founder of the Rosicrucian Order. You're the leader of them.
I did have an insane recurring dream that I was being inducted into their order for like a week. And then I was like, should I go there? And I was like,
you're like, meh.
This is how cult leaders are born. And I'm not into that. I don't want to be that. Anyway, point is. I say point is a lot.
The Rosicrucians.
The Rosicrucians were like, if you put some of our scriptures and books in there, we'll give you money. And he was like, sure.
So smart. This is why these dudes last for like hundreds and thousands of years. Because they keep their eye on the prize. What do they always say? They're like, you can't think years. You got to think centuries. That's what great civilizations do.
That's what he's doing. And so he was like, well, here are the problems. The English language is going to go away or change so much that they can't understand it. So how are we going to explain to these people how to open this, where it is, in a language that they would understand? Because 95% of time capsules are forgotten within the first 10 years of being buried.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So people just forget. And he was like, we want to make it so when they find this, that they can actually be like, whether or not they're like primitive again, or if they're super advanced, or if it's an alien society. Because he even mentioned that. He's like, or somebody from a different planet. And everyone's
they need
like,
to make
you're crazy.
It like a it needs to be like a IKEA assembly guide for furniture, but like to opening up the actual thing.
Literally what he did. He created this thing. So it was a language apparatus. And it was like this machine, like a viewing machine, where he would put the English word and then how it was pronounced in the mouth. And then a picture of what it was, so like tree, and it would show how you'd say it with your mouth.
Oh, like a whoa! That's kind of like what they do in animation, where they've got like timing sheets, so they can like line up how the mouth has to. Because if you have like a pre-recorded thing where someone's saying a line, then your mouth needs to be you're animating based on. Does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes,
like
I do.
What frame land? There's a whole that used to be a whole job. I'm assuming it still exists, but I don't know how much of
probably.
That transferred onto like, hey, you're a storyboard artist. Now you have to do all these things as well. Because again, hellscape. Right. Anyway, continue.
Hell yeah, yeah. An ununionized hellscape that people need to. Anyway.
Yeah.
So he was like, that's that problem solved. We'll have this whole like thing that they can figure out how to say the most basic 1500 words in the English language and maybe they can
that's
piece
crazy.
Stuff together. Yeah. And he got like linguists involved. He was like, someone needs to help
that's
me with
super
this.
Cool.
He got the help of. Because he couldn't do it alone, so he got the help of a scientist named Thomas K. Peters. Thomas K. Peters was like this kind of jack of all trades, scientist, artist. He's really into like engineering and stuff like that. And so he was kind of this perfect guy to help with this. And he's like, okay, I need you to help me find all these different things I want to put in here and help me figure out how to, you know, seal this off. So this guy's an ideas guy. So Peters was like, okay, put it in this old swimming pool. And they found
it's like, what we talked about last week. He's like, listen, I'm more of a nuts and bolts guy. I got big pictures. You got to take care of all that shit. What was I talking about? Oh, it was Edison, as I was saying.
With the help of scientists and things like that, they decide to put it underneath this building called the Hearst Hall. So I think it's actually named after one of the Hearsts, I assume. And there was a swimming pool in the basement. And so this room where the swimming pool was already waterproofed, already encased in concrete and granite, and already near enough to bedrock to be a good contender. And so they're like, we're going to put it in here. So They get the room ready, right? There's that like...
Wait, so they're like, the swimming pool doesn't get to be a swimming pool anymore. They're like, yeah, sorry, it's a time capsule now.
No more swimming pool for you guys. This is sorry, not a time
children.
Capsule.
Yeah.
It's going well, to...
The kids are like, oh, we don't get to... What are we supposed to do? They're like, go away.
Go away. Go swim in the lake.
A rich man wants to make a weird phonetic mouth alien time capsule thing.
Yeah.
IKEA guide.
They fill it. So they go around and collect. This takes like 4 years. They start to collect things to put in it. And he's like, we want culture from all what's happening in the 30s right now. Like what the life of someone from the everyday life of someone from the 30s. So they put movies in there. They put scripts. They put books. They put a ton of books, like tons, like mostly a lot of them are Christian. They also put the Quran in there. They put a bunch of Rosicrucian stuff. So it's a bunch of like weird cult stuff. They had to. And navigational instruments, aviation instruments, just a bunch of stuff that people used every day. Radios, phonographs, and a bunch of records that they could play on the phonograph with a very detailed IKEA instructions on how to use it. So, and so some of these records they put in there were of birds chirping, Artie Shaw, the musician.
Okay. Yeah.
A couple transcriptions from like world leaders. And here's my favorite.
At that time, some of those world leaders were not people we wanted to transcribe.
Do you want to know which world leaders got recorded and put in this crypt?
I'll take a guess, but continue. Well, yes.
It's Hitler, Mussolini, and...
oh, good. Yeah. I'm glad we saved that.
So Hitler's
for
voice...
For 7,000 years.
Hitler's voice is entombed in this time capsule for the next 8,000 years. 6,000 years.
So, piece of shit got what he wanted.
I know, right? Oh no, this isn't. Anyway,
anger.
They filled it with they filled it with drawings, makeup, a woman's purse, the contents of a woman's purse, just a bunch of plastic figurines. Like one of them was like Donald Duck.
I thought you were gonna say a bunch of plastic straws. That'd be part of our time capsule from now.
They
yeah,
can kill
turtles,
future turtles as well. A set of scales, a pocket watch, cigarette lighter, a bunch of cigarettes, a wristwatch, Lincoln Logs. So they put a bunch of toys in there. A flashlight. Then here's the weird one. They put a bunch of miniature mannequins with popular styles of the day. Underneath these glass, like glass Beauty and the Beast rose domes. You know, the thing they put the rose in and Beauty and the
Little
Beast.
Did they know that one of those mannequins would come to life like Kim Cattrall in the 1980s film Mannequin. And she's like, I've been trapped in here for 8,000 years. And then comes out and is like, what is going on?
And this, there are thousands of things in here. And aluminum foil in there. There's just a bunch of cameras. So just dental floss stuff that people use every day. And here's one. Edison's original... one of Edison's original inventions. So that guy's in there.
A patent?
yes, actually. There were patents in there. There were dishes. Anything you could think of from, like, picture just walking into a thrift store and being like, we're going to put all this in a tomb. That's
pretty
much what
they did. 1930s, yeah.
Yeah. So it took 4 years to fill this up. And when they did, it was 1940. And they were like, well, what should we write to the future? How do we, like... We're kind of at a crappy time. Like, there's a whole world war going on. So they, so they pretty much were just like, hey, here's a here's a like a printer's like the typeset for the paper, the newspaper that talked about the world war breaking out in Germany and all over the world. Whoa. So they put that in there and said, well, this just started. Let's hope we don't bury our own civilization. And then they called it good. So they pretty much left the future on a cliffhanger and also put Hitler in there. So they fill with all this stuff and then they take all the oxygen.
All I'm just thinking of is like in the future, 7,000 years from now, Nazism is finally eradicated. And then some person opens up this thing. And then some idiot listens to it. He's like, huh, Jews did everything, huh? I never heard of that. And then you're like, no, it repeats because of this idiot.
It's back because it wasn't even like the end of the war stuff. So, you know, there was no resolution. I mean, and if it's going to be anything like the Egyptian tombs, that everything else is going to be destroyed. They're not going to be able to find anything else.
Ugh.
you know? So it's just whatever's in there.
Maybe time capsules are a terrible idea.
Well, there's a bunch of critics of time capsules being like, hey, yeah, this is a bunch of junk that means nothing. And at best, they're going to open it up and be like, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Like, what's this? What is this for? I mean, I think that's a little bit harsh, because if I opened a time capsule from 7,000 years ago, I'd be extremely excited.
Yeah.
I would be over the moon, even if it was full of like socks or coins. So Thornwell
socks
like,
filled with coins.
It's just
the original weapons just, from 7,000 years ago, just swinging socks around.
Sock warfare.
War socks. I like that.
And I watched this video of somebody who went to visit this tomb, because here's the crazy thing. After they sealed it, they pulled all the oxygen out of it with like something.
I didn't realize you could do that in like 1940.
I didn't either. You could, yeah. So it is it's like hermetically sealed. There's no oxygen in there to like break anything down. So everything in there is going to be pristine until opened, which is also
that's
a
crazy
problem, because if you think about like
disease,
the pharaohs,
yeah, right.
Right. Disease. Well, the pharaohs' bodies were kept so nice because they were in like dry climate. And the second you bring it out of that dry climate, they start to decompose. And same with bog bodies, which is my other special interest.
That's going to be another one.
I'm not going to say anything.
I can
else.
Assume it's a body that's buried in a bog and then it turns into Swamp Thing at some point.
Beautifully prepared. Prepared? Preserved.
Preserved.
Yikes.
Prepare. How many bog bodies have you eaten today?
I actually haven't eaten one yet today, but there is one.
That's why you're feeling a little bit wacky. Right, yeah, I was going to say, you need more bog bodies.
But like they pull them out of the bogs and they're beautifully preserved. But once they hit the oxygen in the air, it's like they start to decompose immediately. Mm. So he didn't want that to happen. And so they got all the air out of there somehow. I don't know how. Science. And they sealed it off by welding it shut. Then they encased it in a bunch of stuff. Enamel, for some reason. I don't know. Just a bunch of stuff. After that,
so they can make pins in the future, basically.
Yeah,
that's another
conventions.
One of the instructions. Yeah, they're like, check it out, I made like a fan art Pokemon like template for you to also turn into enamel pins, which we encompass this entire thing in.
Yikes. That's why is that depressing to me?
Because everything's depressing to us.
Is it really? It is, huh? Everything's sad. Yeah. So they seal this off and it kind of kickstarts this whole time capsule obsession. And so ever since this, it was all over the papers. He had made some deal with Scientific American that if they gave money, then they could like come and report on it exclusively. It was all over and people were obsessed. And so everyone starts doing time capsules in a way less good, like not as good.
And when they're not able to vacuum seal everything in the same way.
Then instead they're like, we're putting this in the cornerstone of this building in this tiny town in Ohio.
In this
bog. We're putting, yeah. Honestly, I didn't mean this. I mean this. Throw me in the bog when I'm dead.
Throw you in the bog is a nice evolution of bury me in the ground. I kind of like throw me in the bog.
Put me in the ground, throw me in the bog. And I mean that.
Throw me in the bog. Okay.
I want to be put into the peat bog.
You
want to
be preserved.
Somewhere in England.
We're going to throw you in the bog with a bunch of socks.
And I want to be like this. And so when they dig me up, they're like, what does that mean? So this company, Westinghouse. Have you heard of Westinghouse?
Yeah, I remember Westinghouse.
Yeah, back then in 1939, before they even sealed the Crypt of Civilization, they caught wind of this and they're like, we're going to do that too. So they made these like little canisters full of stuff and they were like, these are called time bombs. And then the war broke out and they're like, we can't call these time bombs anymore. We're calling this a time capsule. And that's how the name came to be.
Oh, it's not even, what did he call it originally? The Thorn?
Crypt. The Crypt. Yeah.
Crypt, that's right. Okay.
Crypt of Civilization. But time capsule was invented, the word was said because they were like, it was the PC version of time bomb.
Yeah.
It was too like, insensitive.
We need to workshop this. Like, bomb.
This is a capsule. Yes.
Bomb going in the ground. This is not great.
So, I mean, after that.
Gary, we're going to need to workshop this.
So at Oglethorpe University in the 70s, they actually established the time capsule society that keeps track of all the world's time capsules. And they've logged like 55,000 time capsules.
Holy shit!
Yeah. So
That's a lot.
The future people are going to be like, another one?
They're like,
we already have this baseball card of so and so. I'm sick of this.
How many more Hitler speeches do we have to dig up?
This guy sucks. Hopefully there's
too
many.
We get it.
He was a dick, though. So,
yeah.
But the funny thing about this is that the crypto civilization was forgotten. After he left the university and died, that building was no longer used until the 70s when somebody was like, what is this door? This was only 30 years later. And someone's like, what is this door? And they like looked at it and they're like, oh, it's a time capsule.
Oops. So they didn't open it, though.
No. Because it has a plaque on the outside with like all the instructions. And he also sent hundreds and hundreds of instructions in paper form to monasteries, libraries, archives all around the world, just in case some of them survive. So here's the issue with this all, because there's some issues.
There's
a lot of issues. So
number one, Hitler speech.
Number one, Hitler's voice is in there. Number two, and he should have known better at that time.
Don't need to know that. Don't need to hear it.
Number two, a lot of people who got really into time capsules were eugenicists. So there are multiple time capsules hidden around America that were put together by eugenicists. And one of them, I don't even know the name of the person because who cares? Screw him. He was like, I hope that the perfect race has been developed when you open this.
Hmm.
Yeah, dark.
Well, I mean, if you're dead, then yes.
Screw it. So that was an issue because everyone at the time was like, oh, we want the future to see us as what we want to be seen as. This like bunch of white people. And the criticism of Thornwell doing this is that he only put one religious text that wasn't Christianity in there, and that's the Quran.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's a Rosicrucian.
Oh, they're Christian. There's very little from any writings or anything, art, anything from anybody who isn't of European descent. So the only movie they put in there was Gone with the Wind.
So it's basically like modern day. Essentially, not much has changed.
Yes, not much has changed. And so these people are going to open, whoever opens this is going to be like, oh, this civilization was into slavery. Because of this movie.
And Holocausting.
And
Nazism.
And this one religion. And like if they, you know, what a bummer. What a bummer.
Listen, this is why you got to have diverse panels, because they always say, I think when you have a panel of people, I think they say the number is like you got to have at least three of each. So it's like
three
if you have like
what?
Three of whatever. So for I think the example I've seen is like if you have like a board member, if you have like 10 board members, it's not enough to have like, say, for example, one woman. You need to at least have like three, because woman is like the first one that they usually tend to think of. So it's like if you have three women, they're still a minority, but it's like you have three different voices of like one kind of representative.
One
so it's
section of person.
Right. Yeah. So it's not just like, oh, like you're not a monolith. You're like, well, this lady thinks that. So men are like, what? Different women can have different opinions on things? I don't. If there's two, then they sort of try to pit them against each other. But they're like, oh, there's too many voices at once. I don't understand.
It must be something I have to listen to.
Yeah. Perhaps I should consult a book and read more.
That was like when the Me Too thing happened and everyone was like saying Me Too. I had multiple guys on my timeline being like, I just had no idea. I had no idea this happened to anybody. And it was like, I remember just having to sit there for a second and be like, oh, we've had very different experiences.
You're like,
that's crazy. Where have you been? Anyway.
Yeah. So if he had three women on his panel, that's just an example. It could have been three anything, or three Jewish people.
Right.
Would have been like, kind of not a huge fan of this Hitler guy.
Yeah,
maybe he shouldn't be
in
the time capsule. Yeah. Maybe there's some things we'd like to forget about this time that don't belong in the future.
Because at that point, we weren't in World War II yet, but we were kind of, I mean, a lot of people were on Hitler's side in America.
Oh, yeah. What's
that
thing?
Talk about.
They were at the Madison Square Garden. The Nazis had like a big, American Nazis, right?
They had a big rally, didn't they? Yeah, and
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
People...
I think I'm not making that up. I'm saying I'm pretty sure it was Madison Square Garden. They had like a Nazi rally specifically. That was a very famous thing.
Yep, Lindbergh.
Anyway, the point is
Henry Ford. Anyway, so a bunch of people were already like, oh, well, maybe Hitler's kind of, you know. And so a year later, they go to war, and it pushes people to the right, the quote unquote right side of history. And things were fine from then on.
Everything got fixed. Yeah,
I haven't talked. Yeah, everything. We're good. We're a perfect
everything worked
society.
Out.
The aliens that find that tomb are going to be like, this is a utopia. No, just kidding.
So the racist aliens. I guess I never thought about like the aliens that come here could just be like alien white
racist.
Supremacists. Yeah, they could be alien Nazis. I think it's interesting because they're going off of these pieces of paper that he handed out.
Yeah.
Right? Of, as far as like the list of what's in there.
Uh-huh.
So this could also, I'm just going to put this out there. It could theoretically be an 8,000-year-old prank where like he says there's all this shit in there. And then they open it up 8,000 years from now. And there's like a, yep, again, that can be staged. But then like before they took, after they took the photos, there's a giant confetti bomb or something, or like a makeup bomb or something. And then they open it, or they just get covered in like Nickelodeon, like slime. And they're like, haha, sucker.
You open this stupid tomb?
Yeah.
There's
nothing in here.
Thing.
Joke's on you.
That's awesome.
Or someone like, farted in there. Like everyone just farted over and over again. And then they sealed it shut.
A fart capsule. The crypt of human. No, the crypt of flatulation. I don't know. The crypt of flatulation. There it is.
There you go. Just like
we
in Labyrinth.
We should do a time capsule and just do that.
A fart capsule.
Right now.
We should go around.
Yeah.
Put
like
farts in different
them.
Jars. Oh, that's true. She did. I think she got like she had to go to the hospital. She screwed up her stomach because she was
eating ate a
too
bunch
much
of crap. Yeah,
man, that was a ride. I was excited about time capsules at the beginning, and then now I'm like I kind of don't like them anymore now.
Yep,
that was
journey. I had the same experience, like getting really into all of this, and I was like, this guy has some cool ideas, but then it's like, maybe not. And I get that he said like this is what our society looks like right now. I get
that's
that.
True.
Like,
there is value to that. I agree. Even if it's
especially
if it's uncomfortable. Yeah.
He wrote about that. He wrote that in like the description of it. Like this is what times are like at this moment. As what he saw as unbiased or whatever. But
yeah.
And those were the world leaders of the time. So like, and no, he shouldn't have. But like looking at it, if you're in 1936, you're like, oh yeah, that crazy guy over there. Don't like him, but he's the world leader. And then. Bad aged badly.
Like, no, but also it gives
really
you context,
bad.
Right? Like if you did a if you did
you
a time capsule of 2020 to just be like, well, I don't like Trump, and I don't want him in here, and be like, this is the
it's historical
the thing
context.
That's like the architect of this entire context of what's happening. It would be insane to not include him in there,
right? And the world was like what felt the world was feeling like it was ending. Like after the First World War, everyone's like, we're never going to do that again. That was horrible.
Yeah.
And then we immediately did. 11 years later, they're like, should we do this again?
They're like, let's go for it.
Let's make it worse. And so the whole world was felt like it was ending. So of course they were like, this is what's happening. Like I would do the same thing, but.
I get it. Yeah.
It's hard
really,
because.
It's complicated.
First of all, I think this is very complicated.
Yeah.
And there's a huge bias. Like I got really into thinking about this. And like, if I did a time capsule, like I wouldn't even know what to put in it to represent all of humanity. Certainly
just
not
put,
just white people stuff.
No, I would just put all my books and then I would put a link to my website to be like, you can purchase these books here, and then set up my bank account so that when someone purchases those books in the future, it goes to my hopefully descendants that exist. And then
speaking
they'll get a ping.
Descendants.
Like, yeah.
You just got a time capsule payment. speaking of descendants, they also said that any descendant of anyone who helped construct it or who was there when they closed it can be the first people to open it.
Oh, that's cool.
So,
I thought they were going to be like, needs to be murdered so that there's no trace back to anybody other than the guy Thornwell.
But if you think about like 6,000 years ago, we know nothing. And if we somehow don't bomb the whole world to death, like, I doubt we're even going to remember stuff. People think forget stuff after two generations. I don't know. It's optimistic.
Just a shameless self-promotion. If you're interested in these topics and more, you can read the Permafriends graphic novel series, which deals with this exact topic.
Yes, it does. That's true. Human extinction.
Human extinction. These are the graphic novel. Yeah. These are the books that I wrote and illustrated that literally have exactly with this. Is that what you said was literally the idea is that, like, what if we're not around to explain why the hell we were the way that we were? And then humans are just gone. And then robots and weird animals are like, they have no idea. And they take it and run.
They just have to, like, make best of. That was
they don't even care. They don't even care. That's the point. We do not matter in the history of the universe, which is why I thought it was a funny idea. I kind of think
that might be what it's going to be like if this ever gets opened.
I think I'm going to incorporate Thornwell somewhere into some story at some point. You've given me an Easter egg that I can definitely put in there somewhere.
They should stumble on the crypt of civilization and try to play all the records and none of them work or something. I don't know. Or just use them as frisbees.
It also kind of reminds me similar to what what's his name, like Sagan and all those guys are doing for when they set out the
Voyager.
Not the rockets, like the Voyager and the satellites and stuff. Here's the gold record. Here's like it's similar, but it's interesting to have it be like 7,000 years in the future for Earth rather than like some alien race somewhere. It's a different way to think about it.
Just assuming that we're going to be the exact same, or if we're even going to be here. Speaking of burying things. There's so many things we've buried that are insane, like uranium, like active nuclear garbage. We just put it in a big capsule underground, and we put a
blanket over it. It's fine.
We bury it, and we put a thing on top of it that says "Do not open until this year," and it's like 2,000 years in the future because if you open it, you will die. Like there are several of those around the world of just. Anyway, we're insane. Maybe we deserve to be. Oh, no, I'm not going to go there. That's my tab.
All right. We made it through. That was really fun. That was a journey.
That was a rambling journey. But yeah, it was a
good journey nonetheless. Okay, so let's go ahead and pull up our tabs.
Okay.
By the way, I'll say one last thing. I'll post this. Of course, we're going to post the show notes of the tab that started these. My tab came from the Imperial Iranian Air Force, like fans, not fan site, but it's like this group of people from the Iranian Air Force that moved to, I think they're here in the States. And they made like a 2004, like super dadcore, like website where they're just like, this is our site where we used to be in the Air Force. And
I love that.
It's really funny because you just look at it and you're like, this is clearly and I can say this from personal experience, some uncle somewhere was like, my nephew knows web design. And then that person was like, I have other stuff to do, but I'll put this together so that you can leave me alone. And then they all individually type stories into there. And it just sort of looks like one long run-on sentence. It's weirdly charming. I think it's really fun. And then they also like sell merch. I have no idea who these people are. I don't know. I'm not like advocating for them. Hopefully they're not terrible, but I just thought it was funny.
Hey, I love that it's like early internet. That's legit.
Yeah. And then they have like cool posters of like ships of like planes from Iran, like Iranian 4FD Phantom variants. These are probably all stolen. Like, I don't think they created any of this. I think they just pulled stuff from the internet. Anyway, it's hilarious. And it's like just a weird thing to see. So that's my website that I'll be closing.
It's a time capsule.
It is a time capsule, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a human time capsule of people who have memories of a country that no longer exists. And they tried to make a website that commemorated it. It's interesting. Anyway, how are we going to destroy our tabs this week? Is it going to be like a flying saucer coming in and shooting lasers?
Yeah, I think it should just do like
pew, 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 pew. Okay, a UFO shooting just lasers and blowing up our
obliterating, tabs. Obliterating them, putting all holes through them. Yeah,
are you ready to go? You go ahead and count us down.
Okay, 3, 2, 1... Closed.
Goodbye.
Close that time capsule.
Close the time capsule. Get the aliens back home. Dunzo. Okay. That was very nice. Moving on to listener emails. I'll go first. So our first email is from Ella from Western Australia.
Hey, we're collecting
very
people.
Exciting. I'm Ella from Western Australia, as I just said. Amongst immense entertainment, your podcast has baffled many of my friends. I assumed as chaotic neurodiverse people, all our phones were bursting at the seams with open tabs. Turns out I'm the only one with 100 plus tabs open. Whoops. They all think it's very strange that I don't close them. You're not the only one. I've also experienced this too. Like, I have a couple of friends where I was like, yeah, I'm sure you would have a million tabs open. And they're like,
and they don't. What?
And they don't. It's strange. It's not
many
like a...
Many of my friends, they're like, interesting. So it's a show about like Wikipedia? And it's like, no.
These are not people who like have their lives together, by the way. These are people who are just as chaotic as us. And for some reason, when it comes to tabs, they're like, absolutely not.
No, we're not.
Which is my thing with you, with your texts. Like, I'm like, absolutely not. I can't have any notifications on text. I immediately have to read them. I can't function until they're all gone. Yeah.
Devin, I explained, I figured out why that is. Like, my ADHD brain just assigns all of the, it turns all of the little red circles or whatever, the notifications, it becomes part of the landscape. It becomes part of the whole. And so I look at it and my brain has already decided that's how it's supposed to be.
Interesting.
And
mine is like,
it's a prison.
Mine is like, it's guilt yelling at you. Each number that increases is like, you're not dealing with your life. You need to do this immediately. Because if someone's dead or there's like a bomb about to go off, or there's a time bomb, time capsule, whatever.
Whoa.
Or there's aliens and I missed the text.
Well, that's different. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all panic induced anxiety. Yeah. I have a lot of that. Continuing on
I don't.
With Ella. Anyways, my tab, Ella says this, not me. My tab that I'm closing today is an article about how in 2007, a man in Western Sydney stole a privately owned tank from someone else and went on a rampage through at least five suburbs at 2 a.m. It took police.
Didn't that happen in L.A. too?
Probably.
Oh, the steamroller guy. Never mind.
Steamroller guy? I don't remember the steamroller guy.
I'll find it out.
Okay. It took police 90 minutes to arrest him. Meanwhile, he took out telephone wires and a power substation, but the chase only ended when the man stalled the vehicle.
It's funny that Ella says, it's funny that she's like, it's crazy that someone could privately own a tank. And I'm like, as an American, that is absolutely not crazy.
Yeah,
that sounds just about right.
Like, unfortunately, yeah.
But this did happen in San Diego in 1985.
With a tank.
Somebody drove a tank around until the police shot him. It's really sad.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, America.
Right. So she says, kind of crazy that someone can privately own a tank / armored vehicle in the outer suburbs of Sydney, and that the chase only stopped when he stalled the tank. Thanks. I mean, it's a tank. How are you going to stop a tank?
You can't with
it's
another tank.
Literally a tank. That's the whole. Yeah, you're going to have to get another tank.
Yeah.
Thanks for all the facts and thoughts, Ella. Smiley face. Done in the old school way, which is a colon with a closing parenthetical.
Oh, nice.
I appreciate that old school style. Thank you, Ella.
Thank you, Ella.
We're really excited to have a friend out in Western Australia. I hope you enjoyed the bull shark story, because that was the Australian one that we did so far.
Oh, yeah. That was in Queensland,
maybe more
though,
fun
wasn't it?
Stories. I think that was on the east side of Australia, but it's in Australia nonetheless. I mean, that's the only one we've talked about Australia so far on
that's
the show.
That's true, which is weird because usually like a bunch of crazy stories are from Australia. But okay, thanks, Ella. Mine is from Erica, and she's from Provo, Utah, and also my one of my best friends. So yes, Erica, this is so I'll explain at the end. Okay, she says, "Hi, Hannah and Kaveh. This isn't a tab I keep open, but is one I continually return to because it is truly unhinged. It is a Wikipedia tab about the French Revolution soldier, Terrar." I don't know how to pronounce that. Terrare?
Terrar, I guess. I don't know.
Terrar, who had unusual eating habits and an insatiable appetite. It's funny because Erica was the one who showed me this tab this like 15 years ago.
Like, okay.
No joke. She loves Terrar. And I forgot all about him, but this is her go-to. Anyway. When he was young, his parents forced him to leave home. They couldn't provide for him because he ate so much. Things he ate include a meal intended for 15 people, stones.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Stones?
Just wait. Stones, an entire basket of apples, live animals, including snakes, puppies, lizards, eels, and cats. Your face. Food from rubbish heaps and gutters and offal. At one point, he was taken to the hospital due to an intestinal obstruction. While he was at the hospital, he attempted to... This is disgusting. He attempted to drink blood from patients and bodies at the morgue. Oh, Kaveh's really...
I'm just very confused.
Yeah. There's
no,
a medical
I don't care.
Thing.
I'm not like grossed out. I'm just sort of
okay,
like, what?
No.
I'm very like, I don't understand how this works. I'm like, I've never heard of something like this.
He was ejected from the hospital when he was suspected of eating a toddler. He's His unusual skill was used in the war to send important documents. He would swallow documents, go through enemy lines, and then pass them because he didn't speak German.
Oh, he's like a drug mule, basically.
Yeah, and couldn't be interrogated. Some thought he must have some sort of mental illness, but he was never diagnosed. The description, this is still
probably
going.
Ate the doctor that was trying to diagnose him.
Yeah, probably. The description of his appearance was nightmarish. Quote, unusually soft hair, an abnormally large mouth, heavily stained teeth and lips that were almost invisible. When he had not eaten, his skin hung so loosely that he could wrap the fold of his skin from his abdomen around his waist. Is this real? When full, his abdomen distended like a huge balloon. The skin of his cheek... I can't know if I can read this. The skin of his cheeks was wrinkled and hung loosely, and when stretched out, he could put 12 whole eggs or apples in his mouth.
Or 100 sugar cubes.
Sugar cubes. I was going to say, how many? His body was hot to the touch, and he sweated heavily. He constantly smelled bad. He was described as stinking to a degree that he could not be endured within a distance of 20 paces. The smell became noticeably worse after he'd eaten. His eyes and cheeks became bloodshot. A visible vapor rose from his body, and he became lethargic, during which time he belched noisily, and his jaws made swallowing motions.
Post-cab nap, like I said.
He had chronic diarrhea, which, oh, Erica, I wish I could tell you guys everything about me and Erica's relationship, because most of our relationship has been trying to gross each other out over the years. And she did something truly so gross that I haven't been able to think of anything better. And I'll get into that later. But this is also really gross.
Okay.
He had chronic diarrhea, which was said to be fetid beyond all conception. He eventually...
Fetid? Like celebrated? Like...
No. Like fetid, like F-E-T-I-D, like disgusting.
Oh, I like the idea of them fetting his diarrhea, where they're like, this deserves a party for how putrid your diarrhea is.
He eventually died from tuberculosis and an extreme...
Oh, that's what killed him.
Prior to his death, he swallowed a golden fork. The fork was not found upon dissecting him. Erica.
Aliens.
From Erica. There's the link. And I remember reading about this the last time she talked to me about it. Every few years, she's like, remember this guy? But I don't remember all the stuff about diarrhea. Anyway.
Heavily fetid. Just remember, he had diarrhea part. He had parties in honor of his diarrhea. Everyone was there.
Everyone. All of his friends. But I know
all
that
of his
I
friends.
He had some disorder that caused him to be insatiably hungry. Like he was always craving food or something. I saw some other person had it or something, but
did they say what year he or how old he was when he died?
Let's find out.
It's not super important, but I just was curious. Ooh. Like, did he die young or this is
he
are you seeing
died,
the diarrhea party?
He was 25 when he died.
Okay, yeah, that sucks. That sucks up. Anyway, yeah. Erica, thank you for the lovely image of a diarrhea party. Sorry, diarrhea celebration, I should say. A celebration of diarrhea, a career. Tarar, is that his name?
Tarar,
yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Century of diarrhea. It's like an award ceremony. Anyway, yes, thank you, Erica.
We got to wrap it up, right?
Yes.
Sorry.
All right, everybody. That about, I feel like we should end it now before this goes further off the rails.
Are we both fired?
Yes, we're both fired until further notice. We'll see if we get rehired back for the next week. Thank you guys for listening. As always, please watch us on YouTube. We have the video. I don't care. I'm just going to keep going through this. I'm going to make it through. We're on YouTube. Go watch the videos. Follow our sponsor links. Tell your friends about the podcast. Tell your enemies. Tell your therapist. Tell your psychic, so on and so forth. Follow us on the Discord. Subscribe and rate. Also, our friend Joe made the 500 Open Roads Google list, Google Maps thing that you can follow. It's really fun. He put together a list of places that we've talked about on the podcast, and they'll just show up. So if you join it, you can see everywhere that that we've talked about. So if it's somewhere that's close to you, maybe you can pop it into the old Google Maps and go on a road trip, listen to the episode. All the information about the corresponding episode is also there. I think that that's going to be a fun project that we're just going to keep building out further and further and further. So if you haven't joined that already, go ahead and do that. Additionally, we are at 500 Open Tabs on Twitter and Instagram. Oh, of course, I keep forgetting now. If you have an email, if you have a closed tab submission, please, please send it to us. 500opentabs@gmail.com. That's 500opentabs. Let us know what the, give us a quick little blurb. Send us the link and let us know where you're from, because as always, we love to know where you guys are. It makes us feel more connected.
Yeah, even if it's about a guy who eats everything. Especially. And you can also follow us. I'm at Hannah Hillam on everything.
I'm at PermaFriends on Instagram. Just only follow me there. It's fine. Everywhere else is pointless. Although I am on
PermaFriends is a great book series. So also buy his books. Speaking of buy books, buy my book too. It's up for pre-sale.
Buy both of our books. Spend money buying books. What's my website? My website's blacksmithfilms.com.
Blacksmithfilms,
So go check it out there if you're interested. Anyway, I guess that is it. That's the end of our show. Thank you for bearing through this. Yeah. This was a fun one.
Sure.
It's a roller coaster.
It always is with me.
That's true. Remember to keep it Josie, and remember that Iran is not Agrabah. We are not Aladdin. Right. Iranians have electricity and running water and buildings and cars.
Places outside of America are complex cultures.
Outside of Europe, we should say it.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Outside of the Western.
Do not build a time capsule with Aladdin paraphernalia, being like, this is what Iran was like in 1970s. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. See you at the next one.
Bye.